Are you tired of confusing financial jargon? Are you feeling lost in the world of financial advisors? Don't settle just for anyone. Today on our podcast, Money Matters USA, we're going to equip you with the knowledge and the confidence to find the perfect advisor for your unique needs. We start right now with the key steps to secure your financial future.
Money Matters USA with Fred Sage.
And you also need to work with your advisor to create multiple income streams.
You're at the right place for information every week regarding all the components of a successful retirement plan.
Asset allocation is really a driving force to how much your accounts are going to grow.
Fred Sade is a financial fiduciary and retirement specialist.
I have to put the client's interest ahead of my own pocketbook at all times. I must be able to justify why I'm making the recommendations.
Money Matters USA with Fred Sade. Fred Sade.
Episode 153 of Money Matters USA with Fred Sade, founder, managing director of the firm Money Matters USA. Fred, a fiduciary, years in the financial industry, years with his area of focus, and that is proper retirement planning. Fred holds a PhD in economics from Duke University, and we're actually going to look at looking for the financial professional in your life, and especially if your life now is transitioning into that retirement phase. I mean, there have been studies, Fred, that show the success rate of working with a financial professional.
Well, that's true. Usually, people who work with a financial professional do much better. Vanguard has been in the forefront of doing studies about what the impact is for a pre and a retiree who is about a near retiree and someone who's in retirement, and they believe that the difference can be as much as 50% more by working with an advisor. So they use a hypothetical investment. Say you have $500,000, and over 25 years, say that would grow to $3.4 million. But if you were working on your own, it would only be about $1.69 million, which is about 50% less. And they are their studies show that an advisor can average about an 8% annualized gain over a 25-year period, as opposed to a 5% from a self-managed portfolio. And there are reasons for that, not least of which is that the professional is not going to panic when the market draws down, whereas the typical investor runs to safety immediately to cash. And this makes a difference about how much time you have in the market. Mm-hmm. There's a Northwestern Mutual study out there, and they found that 71% of U.S. adults admit that they need help with financial planning, but only about 29% work with a financial advisor. Now, I've seen some other numbers that push that. I've seen a Mass Mutual study. It pushes that up to about 33 to 35%, but at least it's still in that one-third range. Now, one of the great challenges is that sometimes people will come in and say, I am meeting with 2, 3, 4 different advisors, and what I want to know is, why should I work with you? And my first reaction to that is to say to them, whether you work with me or not, you should pick one person and work with that one person. There is absolutely no advantage to splitting things up, because nobody is going to see your entire picture and be able to advise you based on seeing everything that is involved in your financial life. So pick one person and work with that person. Another question that I get sometimes is, why should I work with you as opposed to somebody else? And my reaction to that is, well, before I even try to answer that question, show me your written financial plan, your written retirement plan. Mm-hmm. Show me the written document. And what they then show you is their statements, their account statements, their assets, and whatnot. But that is not a written retirement plan. So the primary reason is because I'm going to give you a written retirement plan that you agree to. And with absent a written retirement plan, you have no idea what direction you are going in. So I think that's the first thing. And the second thing you want to know, and I think this is easier today than it was in the past, but you still have to be careful, and that is under the, especially the new fiduciary rules that will be effective on September 23rd of this year. Anyone who deals with retirement assets is by definition a fiduciary. And a fiduciary is really required to put your interests in front of their own. And anybody who's working with retirement assets now has that, or not yet, but will shortly have that burden. Looking at licenses can be very tricky. Now, why do I say that? Well, the reason is that Wall Street firms, the wirehouse firms, their people have numerous types of licenses that independent advisors don't have and don't need, because we're the independent advisor is doing things that the wirehouse advisor is not doing, and vice versa. We're operating in two different worlds. So it doesn't matter for an independent advisor whether they have the same licenses that the wirehouse advisor has, because the independent advisor is never going to use those licenses. In other words, I, as an independent advisor, I'm not going after a Fortune 100 retirement plan. I'm not looking to add, $1 billion of assets. That's not what my practice is all about. But the wirehouse advisor is rewarded for going after that kind of a deal. I talk to wirehouse guys all the time. They say, "Oh, I got this big deal working, blah 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 blah," and they'll tell me because they know that I'm not looking for what they're looking at. Now, Money Matters USA, our advisory firm, is fee based, and I as an advisor spend a great deal of time studying, learning, taking courses, continuing education. But I'm doing this for the sake of learning. If I didn't get continuing ed credits, and sometimes you don't. Some of these are not set up for continuing ed, but they are credits, but they are set up for continuous learning. And so it's vitally important that you continue to learn. Recently, a professor at the American College made a remark. I'm not going to say who the professor was. But his remark, he was questioned during an interview, and he got short-tempered, and he remarked that most advisors, and he got more specific after that, but I'll just let it go. Most advisors stop learning, and they only learn when they're forced to learn or they're required for continuing education to get those credits. Otherwise, they stop learning. And unfortunately,
things change, though, don't they?
Well, no, because the truth of the matter is, I've talked to some of my study group friends, and they will say to me, "You know what, Professor X, his remarks, you know what, he's right. I only do this because I need to get the credit. I'm lazy. If I don't have to do it, I'm not going to.
Economy changes, so all the reason for voluntary continuing education,
Because people will learn something. You know, a professor said to me, after I finished my doctoral boards and successfully defended myself, and I don't know if they still do this, but you had to go through two sessions. One is you had to defend your knowledge, and then you had to, and then separately you defended your dissertation. Mm-hmm. And after defending my knowledge, one of my professors took me aside and said, "You know, you have successfully defended your knowledge in all your course areas." He said, "But I want you to remember this and never forget it. Your education begins once you exit this institution. It doesn't end here."
Yeah, right.
Yeah, isn't it? Isn't that the best advice
it
that anybody?
It really is.
Yeah, and it's very frustrating when you talk to someone, you know, who's watched a program or saw something on the internet or saw some advertising or read something somewhere, and they say something to you, and you know that what they've just said to you is out of date, it's old fashioned, it's not relevant, and they're completely wrong, but you can't tell them that.
Right.
You know, it's like telling them they have financial cancer and their head would explode.
Right.
You know, so you then have to do your best, try to establish trust, and I might say to them, "Hey, you know what? I'm not giving you any solutions to anything because I don't understand your problems or your issues or what's important to you or anything like that right now. But you say you've talked to three other people, an advisor, an insurance agent, maybe it's four, a tax attorney, a CPA with tax practice. Now you're talking to me. I'm the fifth or sixth person you're talking to, and you're thinking of you're going to divide the baby in half or in quarters or in thirds." Mm. And has anybody ever suggested, and I'll usually say something about tax efficiency, because Wade Fow has, in his research, he's found what he calls tax alpha, and that is tax efficiency can earn pretty close to 0.5%. That's almost 50 basis points a year consistently. There's never any drawdowns, never any corrections, and almost 50 basis points consistently is quite an accomplishment, because there's no one on Wall Street who can earn 50 basis points or 43 basis points or 45 basis points, whatever that number happens to be, on an annual basis, and do that year in and year out with no corrections, no drawdowns, no nothing. I mean, this is just consistency. So when you pay money out in taxes and you pay money out in fees, you can't recover. You may recover from the market if you have enough time, but you're never going to recover from unnecessary taxes and unnecessary fees. So my effort is to be as forthright and as open as I possibly can, because it's important to build trust. So any advisor that anybody might select, it's important that you be able to trust that advisor. And it's not a matter of, do they remember your birthday? Did they send you a birthday card? Did they send you, a AMC theater card for you and your relationship or your spouse, you know, to see a movie, buy popcorn and a soft drink? All of that is nice, but that does not make or break the relationship. I mean, do they respond to you in a timely manner? Are they there to answer your questions all the time? Is it a one-way street? Do you have to be the one to initiate contact? Do they initiate that contact on a periodic basis? Do they provide you with a written comprehensive plan that you agree to, that you understand? Do they take into account the things that are really important? A, having the income plan, the written plan, so that you can control your money. That's the single most important thing, is the money going to do for you what you want it to do for you? Then we must do the tax planning and tax distribution strategies. Income, where's the income going to come from? How much of it is going to be guaranteed and protected? How much of it is going to be variable and subject to the vagaries of the stock market? It's necessary to do estate and legacy planning. Estate planning is part of financial planning today. You just cannot ignore the estate planning and the legacy planning. Healthcare planning, long-term care planning. I find that people just don't understand Medicare. It's very complicated. People don't understand Social Security. It's very complicated. They often think they do. It's way too complicated shoot from the hip on that. And then risk needs to be managed. It's one thing to be 30 or 40 years of age and to have an adverse experience in the market. You have time to recover. When you're 60, 70, 80, you don't have time to recover. So risk management plus tax distribution planning, income planning, estate planning, legacy planning, healthcare planning, because, again, this lack of understanding about Medicare and how much you're on the hook for, and long-term care, which is inevitable based on extended longevity, and finally being able to manage risk so that that you can control your money and control recovery. It's inevitable that the market is going to go up and down. It's a question of how far down you're going to be exposed to and how much time it's going to take to recover. It's really important that just because the market is going up or down, I see the Dow is down today. It may recover by the end of the day. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's down for, maybe the future market is adverse to the Dow. And if you're playing, if all your investments are Dow driven, and you have a bad day, week, month, is that going to be the end of your portfolio? It shouldn't be. If all the things that we're talking about are done, it won't be. And if not, and you're naked, completely naked, then you're riding the market up and down like an elevator. And that's not the way you want to be.
No. And you know, as you pointed out, especially not if you're near or in retirement. Well, now that Fred has given us things to consider as we're looking for someone to partner with, work with in our financial lives, what questions should you have the answers to? And many of those, if you're working with the right advisor, you won't even have to ask them. They will ask and help you find the answers. That's what we're covering in the next segment of Money Matters USA.
We believe in better, a better way to invest, a better way to serve you, and a better result. We can help you determine how much risk you're taking, red flags that could be potential problems for you, how much you're paying in fees or commissions, potential tax liability, or even how to address Social Security. Contact Fred Sade at Money Matters USA, 800-593-8188, 800-593-8188.
Well, that is how you can get in touch with Fred. Certainly, again, that's 800-593-8188, but also moneymattersusa.net. And there you can learn about Fred, the firm, Money Matters USA, and you can be sure to click the Red Light Program tab. Learn about the Red Light on the Dashboard Program. Click podcast and hear the other 152 podcasts with a write-up on each resources tab. You can learn a little bit about the process. There's a lot. at moneymattersusa.net, moneymattersusa.net. So Fred covered in the first segment things to consider as you're looking for what would be for you the good fit financial advisor. Now, again, to stress, if you're near retirement, then Fred is someone that focuses on retirement planning, and it's a different planning process. He's talked about it so much on this podcast, but now we're going to look at what you should have the answers to and questions that you should ask, and many, if you meet with Fred, you won't even have to. He'll bring these subjects up. I would imagine, Fred, a lot of times when people first come to you, is they're going to want to know how their overall financial health is.
That's true. I used to have a client, and he was in the mortgage business. He called himself the mortgage doctor. Hmm. He actually wore a doctor's white coat. He had one of those reflectors, the ones that reflect light.
The thing I've never seen an actual doctor have on.
Yeah, and he also had his receptionist wear the white coat also. Huh. And she would say to me, "I hate doing this." I said, "Yeah," but I said, "You know, it's part of the game."
Well, you know what? She should have gone to him and said, "Look, can I wear scrubs? Because that's comfortable."
You know, I didn't think of that. That's a great idea.
Right.
I wish I would have thought of that.
I'm envious of those people.
The first thing... most advisors do three sessions, and I'm not criticizing them, but that's what they do. First session, bring your information. Second session, here's the plan. Third session, move money. There's a fourth session, if that's necessary. But basically, they're trying to do as much planning as is necessary to persuade you to move your money to them so they can get paid with assets under management. We guarantee five meetings. We'll do six, seven. We'll do as many as is necessary. Now, we're doing this because in our first session, the first session is all about you. We want to know really about your attitudes towards money, what your aspirations are, how you react to money, what you want your money to do for you, what you're trying to accomplish. And also how you spend money, what does it mean to you? What are you committed to? These are the kinds of things. It takes about an hour and a half at that session, and if you went to a doctor to get a comprehensive workup. That's what we're doing, except we're not a medical doctor. We're acting as a financial doctor, but we're trying to get through the same kind of thing. We're trying to also understand your attitude toward risk. I've had people come to me and say, "Oh, I'm okay. I can take a 50% risk in my portfolio," you know, and they tell me that they want to retire, in 24 months or less. And so I ask them, is that a single position, or is that the total portfolio? Oh, it's the total portfolio. Well, you know, to recover from a 50% loss, it means you have to have at least 100% gain, and that assumes no taxes, no fees, and no withdrawals. And if you're going to have taxes, fees, and withdrawals, you may need something in the order of 116 to 126% to net down to that 100%. Now, once they hear that and can internalize that, then all of a sudden their attitude, and most of the time, changes. And I've heard wives say to their husbands, "What is it that you're doing? Look what how much risk you're taking, and you're doing that in my portfolios also. Why are you doing that?" And it's usually because they don't understand the concept of risk. They confuse risk with volatility, and I've said this many times before, but volatility is the up and the down of the market, and it's a reversion to the mean, which is that 50% chance that you'll be successful or not be successful. It's 50-50. Whereas risk has to have three components. You must have uncertainty, about the outcome. You have to have exposure to loss that may or may not be recoverable, and it has to be hazardous. And the hazard can be great, might be reduced, but these are the three essential components in risk. So understanding how much risk you're taking, then how much leverage. Leverage is part of risk, and being careful about leverage is absolutely important, and not being overextended, not overusing credit, paying down debt, particularly high interest rate debt, making decisions about whether you're going to take a mortgage into retirement or not, or thinking about whether you're going to relocate within the same town, same state, a different state, how are we going to plan for that. Do you get stressed out just thinking about retirement? You've worked, it's a long week, it's a hard week, you worked hard, and now you don't really have the stamina to deal with retirement planning or any kind of financial conversation. Does that stress you out? And if it does, then how should we address this? Do we take it in small pieces? And what's the best way to start? In my opinion, it's budgeting. Budgeting is absolutely essential. We can't do any, there's no way to do anything. You can't take the next step. You can't do a plan. You can't do anything until you know what the budget is, because that's going to tell you how much you're spending, how much money you need, and what's the free cash flow that we need in order to create that emergency fund. And are you charitably inclined? You know, you may be, you may not be. And what's your you have kids, grandkids, what's your attitudes towards them? What is it that you want to do for them or not do for them? These are all the kinds of things that have to be done. Are you expecting an inheritance? What happens if you got the inheritance? Would you increase your spending or would you save it? That's important to know. Are you an impulse buyer? If we looked at your Amazon account or wherever you do most of your, you know, shopping, what would we find? Would we find $2,000 of binge spending? I'm making that up, but we do find people who spend unnecessarily because it makes them feel better. Is that necessary? How will we build your emergency account? Well, we know how to do that, and that flows off the budget. And flowing off the budget helps us adjust for inflation as well, because we have to have free cash flow that needs to be built in. And if we don't have it, then we have to work on it. And if necessary, we may bring in a budgeting expert who will work with that person for a year, if that's what it takes, to work with them till we can get that budget under control. It's impossible to do anything until we have agreement on the budget. And if a person will not be committed on a budget, then we're not going to do anything, because we're not going to be able to work together. So, you know, while they're kicking my tires, I'm kicking their tires, mm-hmm. to see are they coachable? I mean, if they are not coachable, there's no point in going any further, because it's just going to consume my energy and their energy. We're going to be at each other's throats, and there's no reason for that. And we need to look at the budget, and we need an income statement, net worth statement. So we have to see how we're going to deal with debt, pay down debt, how much debt. And this is important to know, because if we're taking a mortgage into retirement, and we're taking a substantial amount of debt into retirement, we have to have a repayment plan, and we have to deal with that as part of our strategy. And then people will come in and they really, you know, have all these investments, but what we don't have is a coherent understanding of what's the difference between protected income and income that is coming from a probability-based investment portfolio. And the easiest way to address this is to say, once we can do the budgeting, we know how much the fixed expenses are. And my belief is that those expenses ought to be covered by protected income. And protected income is important because it will allow you to spend each month, because you know that money will be there and you don't have to worry about it. But also because once we can know what that is, we know how much disposable income we require, and we know how much free cash flow we need to take us on the next step. Now, we do need to have growth, because we need growth to offset longevity, health care expenses, and because we need to counteract inflation. Some of that, and the most of that's going to be done, frankly, by having free cash flow. And that's the most effective method to counteract inflation. Most of the software that's out there makes it very difficult to work with the problem of inflation. We're getting some newer software that attempts to address the inflation problem. But I have found over the years that having free cash flow is the most effective way to address that. And also using ladder strategies so that we can periodically close the gap that will open between our income and our expenses. And for people who are just using a safe income withdrawal strategy, they're not going to be terribly interested in gapping, because they're just going to grab more money from their assets. And that's a problem too, because if you're just going with that, and the market turns against you, and your biggest enemy is sequence of risk, because you're not working anymore. So whatever you've accumulated is what you got, and if that pile is reducing, and it will be because you're taking it out for income, for taxes, for other variable type expenses, then you could run out of money. And that's why people who are totally dependent on a safe income withdrawal strategy are always worried about running out of money, whereas people who are using flooring and bucketing, the other two major strategies, just don't have to worry about running out of money. They won't run out of money, because we can always use instruments such as annuities, income annuities, where you cannot run out of money. It will pay as long as you are alive, even if there's no money in the account. Now, people who don't understand annuities always say, oh, that is a trick. It's not a trick. That's the way annuities are built. They're built to transfer risk to an insurance company, which is in the risk transfer business. You cannot book your own bet. You cannot control to a considerable extent your own longevity. There are some things you can do, obviously, but at the end of the day, you cannot transfer the risk of longevity to another human being. You can only transfer it to an insurance company.
What about when you first meet with people and you're evaluating their overall financial health? Would you say, is it fair to say the majority needs some type of a transition, some type of a course change?
Yeah, that's why we do 5-6 meetings. In our third meeting, I have a roughed out plan, and it's roughed out. I mean, we show it to them on the television screen or on the monitor in the office. And I don't know if that's right or it's wrong. At that point, it's based on what they've shown me, what they've said, the answers to questions. I want them to react to that, and they do. So that session runs about 2 hours, sometimes a little bit more. Next session, we've revised the draft plan. It's revised now. And so we go through it again, and did we get it right? Well, maybe we did, maybe we didn't. Maybe there are still some areas. So there are certain parts of the draft plan that we want the prospective client, they're not a client yet, they're a prospective client, to take home and review. And so we will give them a CD-ROM with that section of the plan burned in, and we want them to look at that. Because from our experience and in that conversation, that tells us that those are the rockiest points in the conversation. They come back again, and now we see what revisions they've made, and then we make those changes on the fly. And then now we're at the fifth meeting, and we're now going to give them the entire draft plan as a draft. It's not tabbed yet, and we have, you know, stickies all over the thing, and we want them to review it. Then they come in for the final, and this is where we will arrange to usually have a telephone, a conversation, or a video conference right before the meeting, just to so that we know what changes, if any. There are no changes, we'll then print that out in a binder. A binder has anywhere from 11 to 12, 13, 14 tabs. And then we present that, we go through everything, and if it's copacetic, then that's graduation day. And they get that, they get a package of some other things that we give them, and we have, as you are well aware, we want there to be an annuity in there. We don't know if there might be appropriate for life insurance for estate planning purposes, and we will also deliver the annuity contract and the life insurance, but we've already gone through that, and we have other disclosure documents that we use. If we're going to use annuities, we will have a largely entire session just on annuities, because we want people to understand annuities and to see, once they do understand it, if they're comfortable with that and they want it. If they insist no, the answer is no, then fine, it will be no. But if they do, we want to make sure that they understand it. If you don't understand something, you're not going to be happy with your purchase, you're not going to want to buy it. So you need to understand it, how it's going to work for you and how it will benefit you. If they don't want that, then we have to use some other workarounds, which are not, they're not as protected, or they won't be guaranteed, but it may be the closest that we can get, because that's the way the couple feels. And we don't want to do anything to anybody that they are not comfortable with, which is why we constantly look at risk tolerance. Risk tolerance is always something that is current, changeable, and we do this periodically, usually every 2 years, and we look at risk capacity, which is more stable. Risk tolerance is more emotional, and we also want to get some commitments about what they want us to do when the market is adverse. If we can keep their losses between 5 to 10, 11, 12%, the recovery is very quick. If they want losses in the 35, 40, 50, 60%, we're not going to work with them, because we're not going to be responsible to try to do that kind of recovery. It takes too long to try to recover from that. And at these ages that we're talking about, you don't have that. You don't have the luxury of time any longer. You cannot afford these major corrections and the major drawdowns. So we have to remind people that when you're doing retirement planning, you have to look toward the long term. And the time horizon is very important, because you're really playing for the long game. You're not trying to play a short game. You can play a short game on some of your assets if you want. But that's why we tell people, open up. And if you've got a position, or you want to, speculate in the futures markets, puts and calls and so on options trading, open up an account and you do it. And if you hit the ball out of the park, that's great. I'll congratulate you. And if you lose money, well, I didn't do that. I don't want to be responsible for anything other than than managed losses in that between that 5, 10, 11%. And by doing this, we're in a position to help you get through and have a successful retirement, so you can enjoy your retirement. You don't have to worry about running out of money and longevity and risk and how what will happen if. All those questions are really being answered for you because your exposures are not very great and you have sufficient protected income to meet your fixed expenses. So having said that, you don't want to be in a position where you just wipe out. And I've seen people come in. I had a widow come in last year. Her husband, when he had died, left her about $1.4 million in a portfolio. She was down to $300,000. And she got a referral to somebody who is a wirehouse guy. And I'm not locking wirehouses, but I won't say which one. But she was down to $350,000. And now she came in to me, and, you know, her suspicions were profound. And I just made a couple of observations, and I said that, you know, I didn't feel that I could work with her because she was at the point where she trusted no one. And what she was telling me she intended to do was going to fail. There's just no way, that you can just put your money, in a passbook savings account and draw out, the low rate of interest at the time. It was going up. But even now, at 4% on $350,000, that's just not enough money plus Social Security. It's just not enough money, to live on. It's $14,000. And she had his Social Security was higher than hers. She did not have good Social Security advice either. She was told to claim the husband's benefit. She should have claimed her own, and not the spousal. Just bad advice across mm-hmm. the board. So the thing of it is, don't make a hurried decision. Don't make a rushed decision. But on the other hand, you should be willing to discuss your views, your feelings, your attitudes, your behaviors, and then wind up with a written plan. Otherwise, it's just stuff. You own a lot of stuff, and there's no direction. And it's just buying and selling. And it's just impossible. It's impossible to convert that into, on your own. You won't be able to convert that into a plan. I mean, as part of our process, we show you existing, we show you what our suggestions might be, and we'll show you why we're doing that. We'll also show you what your drawdown potential is. And this is vitally important. We're not a fan of Monte Carlo. If somebody ask us to do Monte Carlo, we will do it for them and show them the results in real time. But there are real problems with Monte Carlo, and that's a whole. We could do an entire program on Monte Carlo issues. The only thing I'm going to say is telling somebody that they've got a 35 or 40% chance of failure and they got a 65% chance of success. You tell me what that does other than give you aggravation, because you don't know what that means. And that's not what the Monte Carlo scenario is telling you. It's just telling you that in our case, we do 25,000 per iteration. What we're saying is that based on these, some of the time it works and some of the time it doesn't work. that's it, which is why we're heavy on scenario, realistic scenario planning. And I think you will find that people who may be using some form of scenario planning are giving a much more accurate picture of what you can expect to happen if these scenarios, and scenarios have to be realistic, mm-hmm. but what will happen to your portfolio. And that again, is why we want to be in that 5, 10%, 11% drawdown range, so we don't have, you know, we don't have this nonsense of write it out, you'll be fine, in the long term it'll work. You're never going to get that conversation from me.
Well, no, I know, and I like the realistic scenario planning, definitely. And as Fred said, it's important to have the plan so that then you can have an enjoyable retirement. If you'd like to meet with Fred, 800-593-8188, 800-593-8188. I mentioned his website, moneymattersusa.net, for the red light program, for the podcast tab, and more. You'll see there on the homepage, schedule a meeting. So that's another way you can do that, at moneymattersusa.net. And schedule to check in next Friday. These drop every Friday, except on holiday weekends, sometimes a little earlier. It is Money Matters USA.
Investment advisory services offered through Money Matters USA, LLC. Fred Sade and his guests provide general information, not individually targeted personalized advice, and are not liable for the usage of information discussed. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles should not be considered investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell in any of these financial vehicles. This information should also not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with a professional specializing in the fields of tax, legal, accounting, or investments regarding the applicability of this information for their situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Investments will fluctuate and when redeemed may be worth more or less than when originally invested. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products. They do not refer in any way to the securities or investment advisory products. Fixed insurance and annuity product guarantees are subject to the claims paying ability of the issuing company and are offered through Money Matters USA, LLC. By contacting Money Matters USA, you may be provided information regarding the purchase of insurance products.